or Ellington?
You.
Oh, what's the question? Our question is going to be, what is your phone background and why?
Oh, mine's really light.
Mine is my dog sitting on a table, angry that I left her alone for like 5 minutes.
Okay, Snyder Krimquist.
Hi, mine is some leaves from Pinterest because I did not take it.
Senator King.
Mine is me and my friends at the Gustavus side.
Senator Shake.
Mine is a picture of me and my boyfriend from home.
Senator Sella.
Mine is a collage of 3 different pictures of 2 of my friends and I and then 1 of my family, and then my home screen is like clouds.
Senator Jorgensen.
Okay, mine is so pretty and so elaborate. So it's a picture of my mom with the game Racco. And it has a little family on the game Racco. And she cut out our faces and glued them to the game Racco. So it's the most beautiful thing ever.
Senator Cirillo.
Mine's a picture of me and my friend Katie.
Senator Warren.
Mine is, I'm ready because I need to go.
Senator Zara.
Mine is a picture of my parents.
Senator Haney. Senator Johnson.
Mine is a picture of a sunset that I took because I'm a sucker for the aesthetics.
Senator Pippis.
Mine is some pretty colors, except like the way the pretty colors.
Senator Nelson.
Mine is a collage of Bibble because my friend said he didn't like Bibble, and so it's bite.
Senator Young.
All the like Winnie the Pooh and all the people from 100 Acre Woods crossing the bridge. That's a little cool.
Senator Pepsi.
Mine is picture me and my boyfriend after the homecoming game.
Senator Zahn.
Mine is a old painting that also happened to be used for the Frankenstein book that everybody bought when my class went to this college. So I have multiple requests, oftentimes asking me why my background is coming from Frankenstein. I have to explain to them that it is indeed not. It is just a painting I thought was cool.
Nice. Senator McDonald.
Mine is me on the football field.
Senator Lynn.
Mine is my mom at a Journeys concert outdoors with a sunset in the background in the middle of eating a burrito.
Mine is also pretty colors.
So mine is I have a lot of notifications and I can't clear them all right now. But like it's a kid dressed in a flamingo like costume and it says single and ready to flamingo. It's really cute.
Controller Johnson.
I have some Twins postseason propaganda because it's the only thing that can keep my hopes up right now.
Chair Mikey.
Mine is my dog.
Chair Cox and Seven.
Mine is myself.
Mine's like a stupid quote with like a pale pink background because I like the color, but.
Mine also has a pale pink background, but it's just the word yikes.
Mine is a picture of me and my sister.
Mine is a picture of one of my brothers.
Administrative Director Concepcion.
Mine is my cat stuck with her head stuck in a bag of Doritos. Yeah. All right, with that we have quorum.
Yep, and we have quorum as Administrative Director Concepcion said. And now we will start the approval of the minutes from September 30th. Are there any discrepancies with the minutes? Any discrepancies? All right, the minutes are approved. And then now we'll open the floor for community comment. Is there anyone from the community that wishes to comment? Nobody. All right, well, now we'll move on to one of the first things on our agenda, which are committee updates. If there are any chairs that would like to give their committee updates, please raise your placard. Ombudsperson Doran.
work on getting those out to the student body as soon as possible and establish a timeline for voting on them. Because we did approve an expedited timeline. So I'll come back with proposals for that probably next week. And then we've also broken the amendments into three separate amendments. So if you look, they're virtually written the same except for the inclusive excellence chair. Instead of having C and F, which we talked about last time, we combine them into what is now E, which says continually work to encourage inclusive discourse between the Senate body and the DeSantis community, especially with regards to collaboration between organizations that represent diverse ideas and identities and that work to promote open-mindedness and acceptance of all facets of campus. So this mentions both the community at large and also the special role that the relationship between Senate and organizations that represent diverse ideas and identities has. So I can take questions now on the first one, so you have my time for questions.
Funny personal privilege, will you turn the speaker volume off?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a lot better.
Are there any questions?
So seeing no questions, we'll move to the Second Amendment.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I'm just having
a little battery. So this is the student and academic affairs chair again. The student and academic affairs chair shall hit the Senate body on new Senate, state, and federal level legislation impacting higher education and funding in a timely manner. So basically, originally you talked about reviewing all state and federal level legislation. We thought that would be a lot of work. So instead, this is like new bills that the Minnesota legislature might introduce, or new federal level bills related to the way that higher education is shaping in the United States. Further, they will periodically survey the campus community regarding academic policies and student services at Gustavus, including but not limited to registration policies, functioning of the academic support system, center, printing process, timely warnings, accessibility of honors programs, and career development programs. The tech chair could possibly switch the and of from yep to under point E, and then remove the semicolon. Yep, and then yes, thank you.
Semicolon.
Yeah, semicolon there. Basically just further defining what exactly student and academic affairs are, because that's kind of an ambiguous term. I now yield the rest of my time to questions on this amendment.
Any questions?
Did everyone have time to read it last night? No questions, no opposition. We'll move to the last amendment. This again is an amendment to the bylaws. Should the constitutional amendment not be passed, it will simply be redacted because it will pertain to a chair that doesn't exist. But for now, we are moving forward with this just so we have the infrastructure in place pending that bylaws. I mean, pending that constitutional amendment approval by the student body. So this says the environmental sustainability chair shall nominate one student at large to serve on the committee, meet with the Environmental Action Coalition leadership team on a bi-weekly basis to coordinate the Senate's efforts with the work of the student body, release a semesterly sustainability environmental responsibility report, which will include documentation of the Senate's work to date in the areas of campus sustainability and environmental responsibility, input from EAC, the state's administration, the physical plan, and other key campus actors, and a plan of action for the coming semester.
Senator Young.
So we kind of went back and forth on this in the ethics committee vote because we recognize that issue. What we ultimately came to the decision on is it's relatively easy, but to amend the bylaws. The bylaws are meant to be a document that reflects the state of the campus in that moment. And so being able to point to something very specific and say the EAC, and then later have the opportunity to change that if that needs to be changed, I think is more beneficial. Ambiguous meet with campus leaders in environmental sustainability. There's not a ton of specificity with that language, so for the sake of specificity, we'll have this for now, and we'll amend as needed in the future.
Are there any other questions? And this person, Dora, is at all? And then Finance Chair Gupta also had an update, but he's currently not here. So we'll just move that to new business then. Do you want to give the update?
I don't have the Gus Bus numbers, but Finance Committee is sending out application acceptance and denials tonight. So if you apply to that, look forward to that. And we're just busy giving out money.
We'll table the discussion of the Gus Bus for later. And now we're entering the old business. And for old business, we wanted to talk to you about proper meeting etiquette with parliamentary procedure. So one, we know that the meeting last week was pretty lengthy for a second meeting, and for just a meeting in general. And we wanted to remind everyone to be patient and observant with the parliamentary process, especially if you've been a senator before. Because you already know the process and you know how everything goes. So we understand that you already have the knowledge and expertise to be in the Senate, but for the majority of senators and half the cabinet members, that is not the case, and this is the first time that they're actually experiencing this type of environment, so we just want you to be conscious of that. And two, please be respectful, because under any circumstances should you speak without being called on. You only have permission to speak if we call your name, so nobody speaks out of turn. Also, it's also because if the previous speaker hasn't yielded yet, then they still have the option to speak. So also, do not interrupt each other and interject unless you're asking a particular question to a specific member. We saw that last week there were constant interruptions that stopped the meeting from going forward. And this led to confusion among a lot of people and just some disengagement by the end. And we don't want that. We just want our Senate to be productive and actually doing something. And then three, the parliamentarian obviously has lots of control. and whenever there is confusion or disagreements about parliamentary procedure, we have a parliamentarian to tell us how to conduct the meeting properly. So whenever we're unsure about a particular rule, we will pause, and then if it does get out of hand, I'll just bang the gavel, and then we'll have Parliamentarian Boyden explain the rules, and then move on with the meeting. So, are there any questions? Seeing none, we will actually move on to new business. So I actually have an update from the MAPSIS Board of Directors. Oh, okay, never mind. All right, So we're going on to the constitutional amendments then. And so, did you want to continue with the discussion?
Yes. I mean, we are now seeking motions based on this. The reason for the formatting of having it as a committee update was just so that we could all get introduced to it, and now we're open for motions from senators.
Senator Young? All those in favor of so now we will move on to discussion.
So I think we don't have the floor.
Yep, you still have the floor.
Any of the senators that would like to speak? Seeing none, we'll now move to a vote. All those in favor of passing the first section, the first section of the amendments, say aye.
Aye.
All those who oppose, say nay. Senator Young, did you want
to? Oh, no, I thought the vote was over. I was going for that. Okay.
We all go.
And then any abstentions? And seeing none, the motion passes. Senator Young.
I move that we adopt the second section. but given that, I mean, there may be more discussion on the third. So I just move that we adopt the second section.
Any discussion on the motion?
I like the language of this as well. That's good. I'm sure I'll vote for this one as well. It's a good clarification. I yield.
All right. If there's no further discussion, we can move on to a vote. All those in favor of passing the second part of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All those who oppose, say nay. Any abstentions? All right, and with that, the second amendment passes. Senator Young.
the third section of the bylaw amendments.
Second goes to Senator Young.
I think that leaving the specific mentions of the Environmental Action Coalition does, I guess, fit within the ideas of what the bylaws should be. I think the point of them reflecting the current times makes sense. My only concern with that would be potential collapse for a semester or so. But I still feel that the spirit of the chair and
any further discussion? Seeing none, we'll move on to the final vote. All those in favor of the third amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All those who oppose, say nay. Any abstentions? All right, well then that passes. Now we'll move on to new business. And I do have an update from the MAPSIS Board of Directors. So what MAPSIS stands for is the Minnesota Association of Private College Students. So it's a group of student leaders who are most likely like presidents, co-presidents, vice presidents of other schools, like Gustavus, so the other 17 private colleges in Minnesota. And the main purpose of the organization is kind of like to be like a governing body of all the senates and like student governments around the around Minnesota and around those schools, and to work on like initiatives and like campaigns within the schools to like just unify us all. So the people who showed up to the meeting was myself. It was actually done through Zoom call, so I didn't have to drive anywhere. It was just like through like FaceTime call, you know. So we meet every month, by the way. The people that came were the co-presidents from Hamline, St. Kate's, Augsburg, McAllister, St. Scholastica, and Gustavus. And we talked about the initiatives that we're focusing on at our schools, such as mentioning from Gustavus that we want to promote more transparency between the administration and the student body, promote diversity, equity, and inclusion in all areas of the campus, and then increase sustainability efforts. And those were just a few of the issues that I highlighted. We normally talk about new issues every month, so that's what we're going to be doing. Based on what the other co-presidents said, the Augsburg co-presidents are working on an initiative to provide more resources and support for DACA students on their campuses, especially because a lot of them don't have the option for work study or like can't do work study, so they're trying to find alternative methods for that. And then St. Kate's is trying to be more eco-friendly with their CAF, just like with food waste and such, and like trying to find a better way to put that, yeah. And then St. Scholastica is also working on a food shelf for their students. For students that work, like live off campus and don't have a meal plan, this can be a way for them to like have access to food that's more affordable. And then McAllister and Hamline are doing the same thing, but McAllister is actually doing also a detailed overview of their bylaws, so kind of like what we usually do, you know, to like amend the constitution and bylaws. And then those are just ideas that are happening from other schools, and the reason why I brought it to the floor was because just like for ideas for committees, the ones that you're in, it's a great way to like propose like different initiatives that we can work on, and it's a great way to get ideas as well. So we're gonna keep giving you updates over that. Are there any questions? All right, seeing none, we'll move on to more new business. Is there any new business? Senator Kuhnquist?
Yeah, I had a couple of constituents reach out to me this last week. Two concerns that I wanted to bring to everyone. The first one, someone mentioned that they are pretty upset about the CAF funds and how students are not getting more than $20 back onto their student accounts. I don't know if this has been talked about before. I don't know if you know anything about this and why it is no more than $20, but this constituent was pretty upset that they're not getting that money back that could be used for tuition or other needs. So that's the first one. Should I say both right away? Or? Okay. And then the second one was actually a little bit harder, but I had a few people come up to me concerned about the method of communication regarding student deaths, and they were pretty upset with the impersonal vibe that was sent through the emails, specifically regarding the subject title. I feel like I don't have any more student deaths, but I think that's something that I wanted to bring forward just in case, and just for us to be aware of, because language is everything. So
I just wanted to add, we can't really discuss it unless you charge it to a committee. So okay. It would be like one at a time. So like, if you want to talk about like the CAF, you can charge it to like health and housing. But
okay.
You have to make that.
And student academic affairs for student debt.
Perfect.
But we'll do one at a time.
Yeah. Love it.
So did you want to?
Yes. We'll talk about CAF first. So I charge health and housing.
To look into that.
To look into that.
All right.
Thank you.
Person Doran.
I would like to speak on it, but don't we need to go through debate on the motion to charge them first?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I will hold my.
Oh, my. Yeah, I mean, it's okay.
Does anyone second that motion that Senator Cruz? Okay, the second goes to Speaker Ellington. And now we'll enter discussion.
So,
this person, Doran.
Yes. So, with regards to cap money, I think that we could ultimately, the rationale we've heard in previous years is that the cap has an established budget that is determined by what meal plans people sort of subscribe to. And so they're like, okay, we got like this many students on meal plan one, this many on meal plan two, this many on meal plan three. That means we have a total budget of this much money. And so at the end of the month, they've already spent that money. I think that something that a constituent actually reached out to me about was the way to sort of alleviate the issue of like some students use all of their meal plan money and then some, whereas other students are end up buying random water bottles and stuff at the end of each month to sort of make up for the fact that they didn't eat all of their money, all eat enough food for all of the money that they have. And so, and I think something that a constituent brought up that I think could work is finding a way to coordinate giving money that people don't use and end up wasting to students that need more money, either through, like, I don't know how that would work super, like on a logistic level. Like, is it a gift card system where you purchase gift cards and then people can ask for the gift card at the register, like, hey, I'm out of money, can I have one of these? Like, I don't know how to make that fair. It doesn't solve the issue of people having extra money left and they don't get all the use out of it, but at least it goes towards something worthwhile, not like water. Mm-hmm. I yield.
Senator
Carlson.
Chair. Chair Carlson Sather.
So, as the Health and Housing Chair, I have a position on the Kitchen Cabinet, and I'd be happy to talk to them more about this issue during our next meeting, their monthly. One thing I've also heard of students possibly proposing that if you have extra money, you can always buy food, so they make food available, you can always like donate to food pantries or other places like that, which I think could be a good idea on campus if you do. Other than that, I think Cap Money just says that if you have enough left over, then consider switching to a lower meal plan, and if they're already on the lowest, then it's not important. If I can bring it up to them to figure out more. Thank you.
Senator Johnson?
Yeah, so another reason as to why I've heard that they don't much carry over more than $20 is not only for the cap sake, but also from a student perspective, it's because they think that if we can take or transfer as much as we want to the next month, that we won't be eating food just because we're real college kids that need all the money that they can get. And so I don't know if you guys, it's certainly not a truth, I don't know, but do you guys think that people would sacrifice getting enough food to so that they could get more money out of their account? It's an interesting question, but yeah, I yield.
Senator Hippus?
Hippus. I would like to say that this is something that I've also heard a lot from, especially with this question that I required the meal plan. One thing that I looked into, because this issue affected myself personally, as well as a lot of people who I'm very close with, the difference between meal plan one and three is kind of pathetic. It is $1.80-ish per day, which is, it hardly makes a difference when you come down to buying three meals a day at $5.50 minimum for each meal. That's not, if you are paying $5.50 a day, or a meal, for three meals a day, meal plan three is not enough by several hundred dollars. So one thing that I would propose is that a long, hard look is taken at the structure of the meal plan. And if the numbers aren't arbitrary, the numbers right now feel arbitrary. If they aren't arbitrary, they need to be significantly rethought through and remade. And if they are arbitrary, then someone needs to put some thought to them because they don't work the way they are.
Do you yield?
I yield.
Senator Young?
It's a related issue. Meal plan one is way too much money for anyone who is eating less than 3 meals a day in the CAF, and meal plan three is way too little for anyone eating more or eating 3 meals a day in the CAF. So it's a related issue, and in my opinion, it's all tied together, and the way to fix both problems is to relook at the meal plan.
Got it. Okay. And then with regard to the there formally. I don't know how frequently they update them with regards to also the changes in the cost of the food, but I know at least when I first started, I was told that the first meal plan would be best for people who are at, I think it was 12 to 14 meals a week on campus, and then the next one up for 16. That's where the numbers are generated from, I believe, and it's that plus the underlying semester cost for the part of the CAF account money that is, or what you pay at the beginning, the $1,800 or something at the start of each semester, 200 or 50 of that, I believe, comes out and isn't actually as CAF food. It's as part of the operating costs of running the CAF. It goes to that. And then for money left over, my concern with moving CAF money around would be it's not monopoly money there. It doesn't feel as real because you just scan your card when you go through. You don't really think about it. So I would be wary of any system that just moves money from students who have extra to those who are without enough. And then then there's also the question of students who are personally paying into that. Scholarship money versus other family members paying for it. So then, I know if my parents were paying for my CAF account, they don't. But if they did, I don't know how they would feel about me giving away $200 a month to my friends. So I'd have concerns about that. I yield.
Chair Johnson?
I would like to offer the suggestion that maybe Health and Housing could look into the correlation between the amount of money given each year to students and the amount of money that the CAF charges per items, right? So it seems that they increased the number, the amount of money that you have to pay for items, but the amount of money that were allotted stays the same each year. And so there's I don't know, it goes up, but yet we still buy less, if that makes sense. I don't know. We don't have enough money to buy what we would need generally. I yield.
Parliamentarian Boyden.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of the sentiments of the previous speakers, and I think something that could be a little more tangible for right now-ish is have the Health and Housing Committee possibly looking into creating not a campaign, but a system where people who have a ton of CAF money at the end of a month, or those who don't have enough to possibly pair up so they can somehow work together to spend that CAF money or to make sure that they have the meals. Second, sorry. And I know there's a Facebook page for it, but that's not as efficient. So maybe if there's a more efficient way to go about it, I think that'd be interesting to look into, but I yield.
Senator Patterson?
I would just like to echo a lot of the things that previous speakers have said. I think that hearing that there's going to be quite a lot of logistical challenges to a lot of the different like possible ways to solve this problem. I honestly think one of the best solutions is to just completely relook at it. I know I even have a lot of friends who are like in the or constituents who are in apartments or off campus that would still like to get the cap. So even considering like a smaller meal plan for those people who are either like off campus or people who are just generally eating less, and like maybe we consider adding a fourth option, and also just like re-looking at how much money is being given, because I think it's more important to get to the core of the issue than to try to put on band-aids and be like, maybe we can transfer the money. I just think it would be easier and more overall beneficial to look at it from the ground. I yield.
Senator Smirlo.
Yeah, echoing the comments of the previous speakers, coming along on the exact same point, essentially I think that the charge should really focus on really having a sit-down discussion with the kitchen cabinet and dining services about making sure that the meal plans are the most efficient and appropriate things for our students at this time. Making sure that from option one to option three, we are satisfying the needs of lots of different students. What I would say to the senator who brought up the charge initially, something you can tell your constituents is that if you get in contact with dining services with a specific concern about reimbursement, they can have conversation with you about possibly getting reimbursed more. I know they have specific guidelines. I don't know what they are, but I know that a conversation can be had if they get in touch with dining services. So that might be helpful. If you have constituents with concerns about meal plans, direct them to dining services, specifically involving reimbursement. I yield my time.
Senator Shea.
So something that's been brought up previously, I remember who, obviously, the idea of a food shelf donation at the end of each month, I think would be really beneficial, because then it's not like all the messy like students having to transfer money to other students, which could cause a lot of conflict. And also, I think that if this is such a like prevalent issue right now, we need to have a solution that back quicker than maybe re-looking at all of the meal plans, which I think would take a long time to like reconsider and reconstruct, which maybe could not even happen this school year. So just something to bring up is like if people at the end of each month donated their money to just one collective pool of money, I was thinking about how we don't have a lot of non-perishable food in our cafe, so it wouldn't be very good to buy some of that. But if we pooled their money and then someone went down and bought a bunch of groceries and brought them to the food shelf, it would be going back to our community. Thank you.
Senator Hippis?
Sorry. Start with one of personal privilege. My name is spelled Stevie.
My bad.
But otherwise, I feel like what has been said since I spoke last is covers most of what I wanted to say. I would like to echo what I said earlier and put specific emphasis on the fact that I chose meal plan 3 because I was told that it would give me 3 meals a day, and it does not, and that is the intent of everyone who got meal plan 3 with that intention, so I just want to drive that point home, which is evidence towards changing the meal plan structure, even if we work towards some sort of money pooling system, but also I feel like a money pooling system is a little bit optimistic. I feel like it's asking a little bit too much of people to, and I know this sounds pessimistic, but I feel it's asking too much for students to check their accounts as the month is closing and then make the active decision to put money back into the pool. I also feel like it could be embarrassing for students to come to the register and say in front of people potentially in line behind them, "I'm sorry, my meal plan is empty. Can you give me some of that community money?" It seems unlikely to happen. And that's all I yield.
Senator Zahn?
I'd like to echo both those sentiments from the previous speaker, because I find you in a very similar situation in both those regards. But more importantly, I would like to ask about the possibility of talking to the Kitchen Council about the idea of expanding to maybe five meal plan options, increasing a above option and a now below option, since we have a large portion of students who either have way too much money, even when on the lowest plan, or have not enough money on the highest plan, it would appear that the optimal solution here is that we have to expand the difference between them, since money pooling systems are going to get overly complicated, and really the simplest option here is just properly balancing meal options so people can find the correct option for themselves.
Do you?
I yield my time.
Senator Sella.
So the option of a food pantry or donation has been brought to the table by a few previous senators, and I think that is a great option, and it would work with some of the solutions that students turn to now of buying a lot of the like kind of snacks that we have available. If we were to make that an official school sanctioned thing, I think it would be important for the marketplace to offer more healthy shelf stable options that are that food shelves are in need of, that they can that students can donate rather than, you know, just Doritos and all that stuff, so that we are giving back to the community in the best way possible. That also could tie in with, this is just like throwing an idea to the wall and seeing if it sticks, but I know co-president Bakta had mentioned that some schools are opening food shelves for their students, so that could be another possibility. Ideal.
Senator Smirillo?
Yeah, I think all the previous speakers have come up with some really great points, and you can all totally shoot this down. That's completely fine if we want to keep talking, but considering for the sake of efficiency, we have more new business to follow, and the specific discussion we're supposed to be having right now is about like whether or not to charge the chair with talking to Dining Services, and I think that we've given him a lot of really great ideas, and he could have a successful conversation with the council. So with that being said, I move to call the question and vote on whether or not to charge the Health and Housing Chair with discussing with the Kitchen Council.
Does anyone second that motion? Second goes to Speaker Ellingson. All those in favor of charging the Health and Housing Committee to look into a more efficient and satisfactory meal plan, say aye.
Aye.
All those who oppose, say nay. All right, that's the charge. Passes. All right, and then we'll move on to more new business. Senator Kroonquist, could you please restate your motion?
Yes, I charge the Academic Affairs to discuss the emails regarding student debts.
Does anyone second that motion? Second goes to Senator Patterson. And now we'll move into discussion on the motion. Senator Smirnolo.
Yeah. I absolutely agree that we should take a look at the way that these things are being addressed on campus. I know that as a CF, I had a lot of questions from residents, especially living in Sorenson, where the most recent occurrence happened. And that was really hard on the community, especially to just like see a random email from marketing in your inbox with this like shocking, horrible news. The one thing that I will touch on, as far as the actual content of the email, specifically with like causes of death, the school has to be very cautious with highlighting those things, especially in cases of suicide, considering the ramifications that that can have on our community. Widely publicizing those kinds of instances can be really dangerous, especially for those who are already at risk and predisposed to suicidal ideation. So on that note, I think that that is kind of a separate issue in itself, but as far as it goes, I think the school does do a really good job of providing resources in those emails. I think that's a really good thing that they do, but I do think the title lines should be modified in some way. And I would encourage the Student Academic Affairs Chair, if charged, to look specifically into the title lines of them, hoping to get something a little bit more empathetic and personal rather than so cold and just like student debt. Like, it's just not the greatest thing to read in the inbox. I yield.
Chair Johnson. Senator Young.
Yeah. Because I didn't have the memory. I don't have the email memorized. So.
Wait, what was the subject?
Search depth.
Oh. Like an interjection, sorry. But if you don't feel comfortable for this conversation, like you don't have to stay. You can step out of the room. I yield. Okay. Senator Young, you yield your time, correct?
Not yet. I just want to look over it. That was my main curiosity because I didn't remember exactly what they said. Yeah, I'd agree with the subject line would be the main thing. Would be the only aspect of this that feels. But I think it could be changed. Ask request for things to be referred to as, I don't know, passing or less. But otherwise, most of the people who write these emails don't have particularly personal relationships with these people, so it's difficult to try and shape a note that feels personal without also, like, when it's meant to just, it's meant to be.
Senator Kronquist?
Yes, I just wanted to clarify a little bit of what the constituents that brought this up to me kind of talked about. The main thing was the subject line, so I think that's a really great discussion to continue. But these constituents also talked about just like the fact that it comes from marketing and communication. They mentioned that it would have been really, I don't know what the right word is, but it would have been a little more soothing per se if it came from an office of the chaplains. Regardless of like religious affiliations, but just like those that do have religious traditions that align, then that way they can kind of just like specifically seek out the chaplains that will be able to help them in such a situation. And then also going with that, these constituents did talk about the fact that all of the resources mentioned in the actual email are perfect and that it's great that we should have those continuously, but they did feel like it was of like a copy and paste from the first email to the second, but just changing the first paragraph that was a little bit, in their words, a little bit more impersonal, specifically talking about the students. And there wasn't much information about those students other than like they died and it's, you know, heavy pain, whatever, and then it goes into the resources. So these constituents just talked about it would have been nice to maybe like just hear like a little bit more about what they were involved in, and then more emphasis on like community gatherings and whatnot. And that's just again what my constituents brought forward, and that I would like to clarify on. I yield.
Parliamentarian Boyden.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of the sentiments previously shared. I've also had a few conversations with people regarding the emails, and I think while it does seem just like a copy and paste thing, I think it'll also be really beneficial to add other resources, no matter the situation. I think, I can't see it, but I can't read from here anyways. Like, the resources, especially for morning, are very valuable and should definitely stay there, but I think it would also be beneficial to see if we can get something about chemical health and like Title IX stuff also included in there. So then it can cover, depending on the situation, and it's just available, so I yield.
Ombudsperson Doran.
I want to echo a lot of what the previous speakers have said. I think that for the most part, the content of the email is actually fairly sort of not the sort of administrative, oh, a person died, get some help if you need it. I think it does have some personal language in there. I do think that including more information about, like, maybe if they said, like, we will be having a vigil or, like, getting specifically, it says in the top that it's from Jonez, so it's actually from Student Life, but I think it's likely that it is, like, there's some sort of protocol for campus announcements or related to marketing because that's their job, blah, blah, blah. So I don't know if there's a ton we can do about that. I completely agree that the subject line needs to change, and we could add more personal information, not about, like, the death and his family, the student's family, because that crosses a bit of a line of privacy, but about, like, them as a student. So, mm-hmm. I yield.
Senator Shaw? Senator Johnson.
Previous speakers have touched on what I was going to say, so I yield.
Chair Johnson.
I would like to suggest that maybe if we can't change, like, anything about the email, that they send a follow-up email that is a little bit more appropriate, I guess, because when you see these, it just goes right on to the next email, which is usually like, Gustavus ill, today's this agenda. So maybe they could, like, send a follow-up with, like, by the counseling center or somebody, so that people who have just read that have somewhere else to look, right? So that's not the last thing that they see, because that is the last thing that they will remember. I yield.
Senator Smerillo.
I completely agree with the previous speaker. That was a really great idea. What I would say is, I think we've highlighted some problems. So as I'm sitting here thinking, I thought of a couple of solutions and proposals for the chair. Specifically, using the word loss of student and or, I don't know, one of the previous speakers used a different word. But passing of student is so much better than just straight saying death. So that being the first solution. The second being discussing with the appropriate resources the idea of it being sent by a different resource, even if it might not be possible, just kind of having that conversation. And then third, I think adding one sentence even in the email saying, like, for example, in this one, Joshua was involved in game club and was a major, or Joshua was a sophomore physics major with blah, 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 involved in this. And then people kind of know who he is, and it's a little bit more personal. I think adding that little bit kind of helps the student body understand what exactly they have lost. That makes it a little more personal, and I think that follow-up from the chaplains or from the dean of students would be really helpful for students to reiterate that those resources are there past that initial, like, marketing email. So, I yield.
Chair Carlson-Sather. Senator Warner.
I just want to reiterate for if this should be charged to the committee to discuss with marketing, that privacy is an issue as well that they have to take into account and compose within their email, which someone already touched on that. But also, marketing is responsible for handing all press releases, and the death of a student is a, they're required by law to report this to different entities throughout, like, Minnesota and, like, colleges for survey information as well. And it's just take that into account when they're crafting the emails. That's why marketing goes through this. Are you?
Senator Young.
I
Speaker Ellingson.
I agree with a lot of what previous speakers have said. I would just add in potentially naming the PAs as a resource for students, which might be a little bit more approachable than the counseling center, et cetera. Also, I'd like to point out that, yeah, we should avoid the word death, but also substitutes like loss or passing can still be traumatic for some students. So I don't know if we can still look into that, or maybe like have a warning beforehand so they don't just see, like, oh, someone's gone. It's still the same effect, more or less. And then I'm also wary of breaking the privacy of the student, even if we're just talking about what they did on campus, because that could, people are, it's news to them, so it's still perhaps a little traumatic to just like jump into like who they were in the past tense. I yield my time.
Senator Smarillo,
I would just like to move to call the question.
Second.
Second goes to Senator Johnson. Well, I move to a vote. All those in favor of a student and academic affairs chair looking into a more empathetic and personal email, say aye.
Aye.
All those who oppose, say nay. Any abstentions? All right, well then, the motion passes. Any more new business?
Yeah, I'll just be brief here, but something that I've talked to some classmates, and especially people, first years, is just the, and this would be put into the technology chair, but a lot of people just feel like coming from high school, especially in the last couple years, especially in high school, I feel like they've become much more technologically advanced. And coming here, a lot of my fellow classmates have felt as though we've taken a step back in technology as opposed to high school. And so maybe some initiatives such as going like paperless, and I mean that's good environmentally as well as it's efficient technologically, or like using Google Classroom or stuff like that might be some cool initiatives to take up. And I just invite you guys all to think about some things and talk to your constituents about how we can look at that whole idea.
So are you not charging tech committee?
Oh, I am. To try to look into getting more improving the technology in the classrooms. Maybe not improving, but using it more and kind of modernizing it.
Cool.
Is there a second to the motion? Second goes to Senator Sorrello. Is there any discussion on the motion? Chair
Menke. First, I want to say that's a great idea, and thank you for charging me with something. I didn't expect it would be this soon, but it's good. No, I enjoy it. So, so one of my ideas, I don't know if I've talked about this very much, but so we have like a bunch of postings around campus. You've probably noticed by now a lot of different postings that uses up a lot of paper and a lot of like our student senate budgets, actually, because like every group has like $20 or $15, I think is the limit for printing, and that goes for like every student org. And so what I was thinking of doing is talking with GTS about setting up like a shared calendar, not like the calendar on the Gustavus website, but using another service that would allow students to post events that are going on campus, provide details for those events. And that way you don't have to just be lucky enough to run across something, like an event that you might be interested in. You can go online and like look at everything that's going on and see if anything's interesting for you. But as for classroom usage, I could definitely talk to GTS and also the technology committee about things that we can do, resources for students and faculty. So yeah, I yield.
Ombudsperson Doran.
So, have to be
a lot of times the issue of whether or not we can advance technology in the classroom is simply, is there a want from professors to use it? Because ultimately they're the people that will have to learn the new technology, and then is there a budget for it? So I would consider maybe looking at how the Academic Technology Committee can review that instead of,
Senator Smurillo.
Yeah, I think it's really important that, especially as we move forward in time, we continue to look into technological initiatives on campus. I'm totally like thinking this big picture, but like two sides that I'm kind of warring in my brain. One, I think it's a really great idea to have like a calendar or something with the events with the postings. I think that'd be so cool. I totally see it in my brain, like that page on the website, and there's like pictures of posters and stuff. Super cute. The other side of the coin, though, is that if we were to say make an initiative where the state goes paperless, we are then asking students to have those online resources, and therefore it becomes more of a requisite that students have computers of their own. Because then you get situations where students are losing access to knowing what's going on campus theoretically. I mean, we offer, obviously, internet resources for students all over campus in a really great way. However, I think that some of that limits certain students' abilities to access specific online resources, and I think that we should be mindful of that as we go into more of a focus of technology and the internet as a resource rather than printed.
Senator Young?
So I'm just curious from other people, other members, senators, that what specific pieces? So I don't even know what Google Classroom is. So, and like I know paperless stuff, but so I was just curious for any like specifics of things that. Yeah, I have a question for you. Go ahead.
So I can answer right now.
Yeah,
okay.
I think that's a question.
Okay.
Yeah. So Google Classroom is basically a 100 times more efficient and easy to understand Moodle. So basically, like, you're in a class with professors, and I'm pretty sure that it's free, and just something that Google allows if you all have Google accounts, which we do as Gustavus students. But so basically, professors and things, they can, like, assign papers on there, and then you can submit it right through that, and you won't have to print it out, and they can assign readings, and they can post announcements, and they can do everything. But it actually comes as notifications on your phone rather than having to log into Moodle and not knowing until 10 minutes before class that you had a paper due. And so it's much more friendly with the current technology that we have. And can I then talk about some of the other stuff? Or do
yep.
I have to wait until?
You're answering your question.
My question, so
yeah, go ahead.
You're welcome to continue speaking.
Even if it's not related to your question?
My questions were specific to anyone with regard to
okay.
what other technologies and what was Google Classroom.
Yeah.
Right.
And then, so I guess just touching on what previous speakers have said, just I think it's important we could maybe send out a survey as to what percentage of the student body has laptops and easy access to internet, because I would have a feeling that it's a very, very, very significantly high percentage of students, and maybe that's just a total misconception. But if the case is, and then also provide maybe grants and places where we can give students the opportunity to find cheaper laptops or get maybe some price reductions or something so that they do have those resources. Because I just think it's really important for the future of the school to modernize with the times and to become efficient with technology.
Mm.
I yield.
Yeah.
Oh, do you also yield? Do you yield?
Yeah, I yield.
Okay. All right. Senator Nelson.
My main point of concern for me personally is that Moodle makes it really difficult for me to know what my grades are. And as someone who like religiously checked what my grades were because we had something similar to Google Classroom in high school, I don't know if there's some way we can improve that. I know it's asking more professors who maybe don't know. Some of them might not know how to use Moodle very well, but it's something that would really help people in the school work. And I'd also Chromebooks can be like $150, $100
Chair Carlson Sather.
A few things that I kind of thought of that, well, like previous speakers were presenting ideas, was one that online versions of textbooks can not be beneficial to some people in their learning techniques, as well as I don't know if we have a large population here, but it's harder to access like books in Braille and other able-bodied versions of books online in these rooms. Also with that, I feel that the problem with teachers like uploading grades is less so that it's not compatible with Moodle, and many times it's due to professors' choice themselves. Most professors that have been here for a long time and are fairly adequate at using Moodle, and I mean, I think a transition, although it's possible, would have to be discussed, because that would also upend a lot of professors and how they know how to use the current programs. I know I have multiple professors who just choose not to upload grades onto Moodle, so I don't think that would necessarily change the teacher system. There are just also some concerns to take. Obviously, modernizing is a great idea. I'm not trying to downplay that. There are certain aspects of it we have to be careful of, including everyone, and also just how it would apply to not only the student body, but also faculty and administrators as well.
Senator Zahn.
In reference to previous speakers here, I want to make the note that like surveys about how many people on campus have a laptop aren't necessarily as useful unless that percentage is 100%. Because even buying Chromebooks can be a major purchase for people who are struggling to get textbooks. I know textbooks actually have been usually like come down to the wire for me oftentimes in the second semester. And even small charges over that could be very painful depending on like pay times and stuff like that. And I was going to bring it up as a separate issue, but like it could be rolled into this. I was having some discussions with some of my constituents even about the dual process requiring use of an actual smartphone to authenticate, especially in the physics department where we are constantly switching computers that wouldn't have us notarized as an individual can access that login readily, and how that was going to make some problems for some people who are running older phones either by choice or by financial need. That was an issue that was brought to me, and I was going to charge it separately. Might be applicable here as well, just to the technology community, but like how we can mitigate that, because the dual authentication, from what I can tell, would require that you have a device with you, and that's an additional purchase to make for students, and I'm not necessarily comfortable with the idea of doing that to students who might be on the financial fence of being able to attend this college. How you like that?
Chair Johnson?
Yeah, I think everything that I wanted to say has been said, but I'd like to reiterate that college is a learning curve, so despite going paperless, we want to be more modern. The rest of the world kind of works with paper, and that's the way that things just happen to work right now. And so for things like sciences and whatnot, I feel like the use of paper would just continuously be a thing, right? But also the affordability of technology, as well as it seems like the issue here is just student responsibility, and they need to check Moodle, right? You get a notification, so you remember to check your homework, but I think you just need to check to do your homework because that's your job. And also, not like to you directly, but just in general for everybody, right? Like we all have to remember to do what we need to do, so responsibility. And then also just learning curves and adjustments. So for me, like I prefer to print off and read things. It's just easier that way. But also as a geology major, when I go outside, I can't take my laptop or my phone because it won't work when I get out there or my green door. So I just think it's a good idea, but maybe just not for everybody. So people that can do it, I think it'd be great. I yield.
Chair Menke.
So just a brief note on Duo. So this was included in the email that I sent you all about how to explain it. So there's a link to the wiki page, and what's on the wiki page is basically when you're setting up Duo, so you can choose to have a device. It doesn't have to be a smartphone. It can be a regular phone, but it can be like another phone. So like you can like have it text you a number that you enter into your Duo device that you're trying to log into. So as long as you have a device that can receive text messages, or it could also be one where it can call you and then it'll give you like a robot voice, the number, and then you type in the number. And so just a brief note on that. If need be, I could send out another email, basically. So if your constituents are having troubles with that, I could send you all an email just so that you're knowledgeable on like how to use Duo and like the resources that are available for students who don't have a smartphone. So that's one thing. And then also, So I worked at Gustavus Technology Services last year, and so I know the staff there. They're very, very nice people. They really care about the Gustavus community, and they really want to, as much as they want to advance like the technology, they also want to make sure that students who aren't as privileged have the ability to enjoy their Gustavus experience as well. So I can tell you that they take that into account. And if there's any action that the tech committee and I decide to do, it will have that in mind. So I yield.
Senator Shaw. Administrative Director Concepcion.
Yeah, my points were made. I yield.
Speaker Ellingson.
Yeah, I'd just like to reiterate the point about keeping accessibility at the forefront of this moving forward. I think most of my other points have been addressed. I'd like to say I'm more on the inclusive side of things. We shouldn't impose any undue burden on students, even if it is like 80 or 90%, we'll be willing and we'll work for them. So I'm going to unfortunately call the question.
All right, does anyone have a second? Second goes to Senator Sella. Okay. All those in favor of charging the tech committee to look into accessibility and modernizing technology in the classroom and throughout Gustavus, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those who oppose, say nay. All right. Any abstentions? All right. Then tech committee is charged. Any more new business? Chair Gupta?
I guess it's old business. But yeah. We talked about Gustavus last time, and if anyone had the chance to pull up the Excel sheets that I sent out over this week, if you would go to the Senate Drive bin and pull up the Finance Committee folder.
Yeah.
You'll have a folder that says Gustavus.
Oh, it must be in Senate Cabinet. Gustavus. That's the document you shared. Oh, I think, is this it? Okay, yeah.
Oh.
We're good.
Sorry. So, the timings of the actual timings of the Gustavus right now are like on Wednesdays, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m., and on Fridays and Saturdays, it's 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. So, the gist of this analysis was basically if we cut timing of half by half an hour, per week for the whole year, we'll save like around $1,000. So these are the three options that the Finance Committee recommends, which we think would produce the least impact on the student body. The first option states that that we keep the Friday and Saturday times the same from 9 to 2 and change Wednesday timings from instead of 10 to 2 to 10 to 1:30, and we'll end up saving $1,000 by that option. And similarly, the second one says that Wednesday we stay the same, and Fridays and Saturdays we cut by half an hour each, so we would save around $2,000. And on the third option, it says that we cut back on 1 hour each on the weekend and save $4,000. So these are basically the numbers that represent. As you can see, the number of riders is pretty high, like 20,300 over the whole year. And the maximum riders were in the month of March, May, September, and October. We had as high riders, around 3,900 riders in a month. to as least as 1,100 riders in December. So since December is basically a shorter month, we just go like 2.5 weeks in that month or three. So that's probably the reason. The finance committee recommends that we don't change the timings for this year. However, we also do recommend that we don't establish this as a precedent for following years, that the 2019 Senate didn't do anything about the situation, so the following Senates don't do anything about it too. However, like currently we think that a raise of $3,000 is not a big impact on the Senate's budget, and it'll be beneficial for the student body to keep the same timings for this current year. However, repeating my point that we don't establish it as a precedent for the following year, and we can channelize this through the senators that go forward in the following years with the Senate to keep this in mind, that this was what happened, that the whole analysis actually happened, and we made a decision to not change it. The decision is not made, and that the next Senate actually does an analysis in their own year to finally take another decision, not just follow our precedent of not taking any action. Yeah. So, floor is open for discussion for the options or any questions.
We can't really discuss if there's not. It's not a charge.
Yeah. Senator Young. Is there a second? Second goes to Senator McDonald. The floor is open for discussion.
So I have a couple questions. With the numbers on there, the savings, do those account for the increased costs as well? So even with the increased costs, those cutbacks would be that amount of savings?
That would be profit.
So
they're increasing the cost. They're increasing what they're charging us to run the guest bus.
Yes.
So the savings there are based on that increased cost, correct?
Yes.
Got
so
it.
This is not so let's say we spent 36,000 last year, and this year with the 3,000 increase we'll spend 39. So we'll save 1,000 from 39 and not from 36.
Got it.
Yeah.
And do you know if when was the last time they raised the prices?
It happens every 2 years.
Every 2 years they adjust. Got it. Say that I would be probably most in favor of just the half-hour cutback ones to a 9:30 on the weekends. I mean, and just maintain the Wednesday since they're not as busy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's be where I would be leaning. And then I'd also be, I think we could make the decision and just decide that we don't implement it until it doesn't get implemented until next year. So that'd be something if we don't have to. We don't have to choose to do nothing. We can choose to just have a delayed start until next year. So students get set up with that.
So just to bring it to notice that I feel like this discussion, this decision, and me, please go ahead and interrupt me. We wouldn't be taking it as a student body. I think we'd be sending out a survey to the in case we go ahead and thinking about one of the three options or something, we'll send a survey to the student body and ask their feedback as to what options do they feel more comfortable with. And then it'll be a whole process of sending out a survey, receiving their feedback, and then finally deciding on an option if we try to change things. So it wouldn't be a decision as of right now. It will be a decision that will take a little longer process. And the changes in the prices can be made within a month of our decision. So it wouldn't take... Like, if we make a decision today, the price changes and, like, the contract changes, the best bus can happen within a month.
Do you yield? Is there any more discussion? Senator McDonald?
kind of going off with, like, if we, let's say we were to choose another option, maybe those funds that are, like, kind of received as excess that were obviously, we're not overpaying. So, basically, it would go into other activities, in a sense.
Yes, so that money will stay with the Senate budget and will be allocated to different organizations as per their requirements.
Are you?
Senator Young?
With regard to surveys to the campus, my concern, only concern that that would be people not being that concerned about, without knowing about, like, what the budgeting process is and what kind of contingency we have. Since we don't, students wouldn't actually see any changes to their costs, they would just see a shrunken amount of time that the Gus bus would be operating. I feel that we would probably get back a survey results that say most people want to keep it, because none of the students are bearing any burden. It's just, we're just basically asking people to have it less for the sake of maybe down the road we won't have enough money to keep running it as it currently exists. So that would be my only concern with serving the students. But I think maybe if people were aware of where the savings could go, but between the, like, 100 organizations that we fund every year, that's, like, what, $40 a piece? Like, people won't, it doesn't feel like that much when you think about it that way. And per student, it's $2 of savings. So, towards most organizations, that if it was allocated at a per member rate to each organization, most people wouldn't really see much of a difference or notice anything. So I just don't think we would get that much.
Chair Johnson?
To ask the previous speaker or other people, if we don't send out a survey, how else do you think we get feedback? I yield.
I'm not opposed to saying a survey. I'm just saying I don't think what we get back will be, like, I think most, I could be wrong, but my assumption is that most people aren't going to want to cut the hours for the sake of a relatively small saving, because they don't. My only point is that it's fine to do it, but I just don't know how helpful it will be in making a decision, since I think unless the goal is to just make the decision that the students feel is best, that point was more that most of them aren't informed about the state of the budget or the finances, so that the decision would be very different from the one that the finance committee is considering, or the controller and chair have been considering so far.
Any more discussion? Seeing none, we'll close the discussion.
So do we take a vote of keeping the prices the same? Or
the floor was just open for discussion.
It was only open for discussion.
Okay.
And then we close the discussion and we'll move on to announcements. Does anyone have any announcements? Administrator Director Concepcion.
So y'all were getting a lot of emails from me. One of them is about faculty reports. Be sure to get those done. I know a really good time for a lot of professors are like over like daily Sabbath, like 20 minutes at most. Chat with them, get their opinion, look at the questions on the Google form ahead of time. So you know what questions to ask. The co-presidents and I consulted about those. But yeah, those will be due by November 4th so that we can take all the information that we get and put it into initiatives assigned to the different committees.
Speaker Ellingson.
Yeah, I'd just like to remind everyone that DLC's Fall Pollen Bowl is this Wednesday, October 9th, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Ekman Mall. I think we should all show up to show our support for our other student body on campus. You.
Senator Young.
This Saturday, 1 p.m., Gustavus Men's Rugby plays Carlton on the rugby pitch, which is behind the baseball field. Fun. Watch this. Eat McAllister or Carlton, whoever I said. I don't remember who we play. I know we've got a game on this Saturday. I know we're going to win. It's going to be fun. You can come out and support the team. I yield.
Chair Gruber.
Next week, Monday, 5 to 7 in the Courtyard Cap, Chinese Culture Club and Vietnamese Student Association is celebrating Mid-Autumn Festival. So please come join us for some tea and moon cakes and a good lunch. I yield.
Advisor Rubel.
A little less of an update, but you all look very sharp. I do not look very sharp, and it is no disrespect. I just want to explain to you, maybe you guys said this early on, but on Monday night, I have something at the YMCA in Mankato, and so I leave it early to come up here, which is why I'm just a little bit late every Monday, and why I usually look like this. It's a workout program for cancer survivors. In a cohort thing, and I've been waiting to get into it for years, and I finally got into it. So please know that when I come in a little bit late, I left them early to get to you guys, and I'll probably always look like this. But I'm here and excited to be here, and just wanted to join.
We are so grateful to have you.
Thanks. Chair Johnson. Chair Gupta.
CFs are doing a compost event. How many of us love compost? So yeah, tomorrow 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. IC lounge ground floor or first floor. Compost. Yeah, make some bins.
Any more announcements?
Yes.
Oh, Chair Johnson.
What I wanted to say was that ICC, International Cultures Club. Is looking for people to be a part of their international festival or / like fashion show. So look for the details in the meeting minutes. Yes.
And
what
the international festival is going
to be? November 23rd in Alumni Hall from 6:30 to 8.
Any more announcements? Senator Young?
It is Carlton. And then also, sorry about doing all those amendments as three. I didn't know how much discussion there was, and I didn't want anybody to get stuck with the three limit, but we could have guessed just done them all at once. I yield.
Speaker Ellingson.
Oh, it's coming out week for Q&A, drag shows on Friday. I can send a poster of the other events to Administrative Director Haley Concepcion?
Any more announcements? Chair Carlson Sather.
I made a survey, so get hyped for that coming out.
Any more announcements? All right, seeing none, this meeting is now adjourned.
I haven't had dinner yet. I'm so
Oh, Lord, okay.
Can I get something from the bathroom? I'm so